What is up, dough? Welcome to another edition of Pixel and Roll. My name is Adam McGinnis from Truth About It. Today is Tuesday, May 12th, 2015. Your Washington Wizards fell last night, 106 to 101 to Atlanta Hawks in game two of the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. The series is now tied up at 2-2. With me today is a man that goes in Wizards lore. The guy that I think I met when he was in high school on a blogger site in a comment section. Founder of Bullets Forever, now head writer, NBA editor, man at SB Nation, Mr. Mike Prada. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Like I said, the Washington Wizards... 2-2 here with the Atlanta Hawks. You know, tough one last night. That they fell but competed. Before we get into the particulars of the game, just how? What, give me some general thoughts of what you've seen out of the Wizards this postseason.
I mean, it's hard. They've been fantastic. I mean, they've been so much better than I think anyone could have expected. The storyline obviously is that they're playing differently. They're shooting threes. They're driving, kicking. They're actually using speed. That's why it's so unfortunate what happened to John Wall, because you look at the state of the East and, you know, you could say that the Wizards would have had just as good a shot if Wall could have stayed healthy. So, a devastating injury. I was impressed with the way they competed. You know, I thought that there were a lot of points from last night's game where they could have really folded, but they did not. And they really kept it close all the time. I thought that was one of the Hawks, if maybe not the best Hawks game I've seen, and been playing in the playoffs, and the Wizards were still right there. So, you know, really very little to complain about, I would say. You know, they've done, I think, a lot better than I would have expected. It's just unfortunate that John Wall had to get hurt the way he did. It really was a feel-good story before he got hurt.
You know, it's been a crazy playoffs. If you think, you know, here you go, sweet Toronto. Wizards win the first. Wizards sweep the North. Wizards win the first five games. Steal home court advantage in game one in Atlanta. You have Wall getting hurt. Then you got Pierce hitting the game winner on Saturday. Whitman having a meltdown. Pierce just trolling everyone and now leads the NBA in postseason for threes. I mean, just a lot of things to unpack there, Mike. So I think maybe we'll...
Yeah, it's been fun, you know. Regardless of how it ends, it's been a fun ride. That's why, it's just so unfortunate what happened to Wall, because I really think, you know, they're not done in this series by any means, but, you know, they got to now win 2 out of 3 with 2 in Atlanta. Probably, maybe, without their star, that's something to have.
Yeah, you know, I've been to every home game as a fan, and it's been, you know, the two Toronto games were great. You know, obviously the Paul Pierce game winner on Saturday was unreal after they blew a 21-point lead. And even last night, you know, there was multiple times in the game that it looked like, you know, here was Atlanta. Here's the 60-win team, Atlanta. You know, they were playing well, passing the ball around, getting shots. And a couple times in the game, it looked like the Wizards had, you know, every right to fold. And they just didn't. And it was really impressive. I mean, even if you look back to the game they lost in Atlanta, you know, they're in that game at the end. So, you know, here the two games that the Wizards have lost in the postseason, both competed really well and both lost without their star player. Going back to game three, like I said, I was there, the place went nuts. I just want to play this real quick. What it sounded like in the arena when the shot that will now go down in lore was made. I'm sorry if that was too loud for everyone.
Pretty loud.
Yeah, pretty loud.
My ears hurt.
Yeah, your ears hurt that one. Sorry about that one. That was a shotgun blast of... I call it a shotgun blast euphoria. You know, the anxiety in that building on Saturday to watch, you know, the Hawks reserve melt, basically, erase a lead and then them hit a tying three and Pierce banking the game winner and just the pandemonium and the fans, and it was crazy. It was one of, you know, probably one of the top moments, I think, in Wizards modern history. Your take on just witnessing that from your vantage point and just everything around that classic ending on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously here in New York. I wasn't in D.C., you know. But it sure is interesting how almost a year to the day, I was 2 days off. You remember game four against Indiana last year where the Wizards had that 19-point lead? It wasn't a fourth-quarter lead. But they blew that one. And then in that game, I distinctly remember just a lot of crunch time errors where, I mean, I remember one play where John had that wide open three he passed up because he wasn't playing well, and they ran the play for Beal and he missed the three. And then, you know, look, it's an easy narrative, but, you know, the 2015 Wizards had the same experience, and yet they were able to come through because Paul Pierce came through. So it's an easy narrative there. But, you know, I think there's something to be said for that. So it was just interesting to kind of contrast those two games. You see where the team is now as opposed to then. It seems like even if they lose this series, they've moved forward in some way from where they were last year, when really I think a lot of us felt like they were kind of running in place even last year. And it seems like they found a way to inch forward a little bit. Now the big question is whether they can kind of move forward again. You know, otherwise, you know, you can win 45 to 50 games in the East every year. You know, what do they do to get to the next level? I mean, the challenge gets more difficult every year. But it was a sign, I thought, that game that they were able to hold on, that they're moving in the right direction and not just moving sideways.
Yeah, no, I was at that Indiana game that you discussed, and Paul George kind of made some shots, and Indiana did kind of show their veteran ways that they had been there before. And also, it was 9 years this week that was the Damon Jones game.
Oh, God.
Yes, 9 years.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah,
reminded me. I pulled the old Men in Black trick on my brain.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It's on Cinco de Mayo, and it's my grandma's birthday, and Cinco de Mayo reminds me every year, so I can never forget that one. And and I didn't really blog about it because I didn't want to kind of jinx it or anything. And then of course John Wall gets hurt, you know, and I'm like, great. But yeah, it was the same week. I was like, oh, the curse, and then that stuff happened. But I think you were right in the sense that, you know, going back to Paul Pierce, you know, I mentioned earlier, so during the regular season, he made 1.6 threes per game, 39%. In the playoffs, he has made 3.8 threes, 55%. Last night, he hit another 5 threes. But then the one that he missed was almost too good of a look. I know that's kind of a hot sports take I saw Skip Bayless had thrown out there, but it kind of, you know, being in the arena, I was like, wow, he got wide open, and then everybody just expected him to make it. And you know, I played that clip earlier. I couldn't imagine how loud that arena the Rising Center maybe would just have been just as loud. Your thoughts on his play and, you know, that shot and just kind of what he's brought to the team. He was 5-7 last night from threes. He's, you know, just been a breath of fresh air, and it's one of those, once again, the easy narrative of the veteran leadership and stuff like that. And you know, I'm always kind of pushing back on how much that really matters, but I think it's hard to not say that it hasn't with this team, especially Beal and Otto.
I know, it's clearly done something. You know, if we're just talking about the basketball element of it, I mean, you look at the big difference between this team is that they traded in, like, this set piece and a reason that just kind of fit with what they just fit into, like, a little box. This is what Trevor Ariza does. And they traded it in for someone who maybe didn't quite fit the puzzle perfectly, but had enough elements to kind of change the look of the puzzle entirely, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're a different team. And, you know, we'll never really know why they didn't play more small lineups, have them shoot more threes, use them in a way that Brooklyn used them last year. We'll never know why that was, whether that was they really were playing possum, whether they just didn't realize it, whether Pierce didn't want to do that. Who knows? But now that he's in his role, you're seeing, again, the puzzle is just a different puzzle. You know, it looks different, and that's what he's brought to them. The other thing I would say, if you want to look more intangible, you know, this is a franchise that has never really been one to puppet chess. They have nothing to puppet chess about, and all Paul Pierce does is puppet chess. Most people even argue that, you know, there's some karmic retribution from, you know, the Icefall game in Game 3 to the missed shot in Game 4. That would probably be what Wizards opponents would say, you know. But I think it's just an interesting series in general, though, too, because I think, just like the Wizards, Atlanta kind of does not have a great basketball history. I mean, this would be their first conference finals appearance in Atlanta. And so it's not like the two teams are not, don't have this, the history is not playing on the court, right? Like, there is nobody, Damon Jones is not on that court, you know, Michael Ruff is not on that court. Everybody was on the 1988 Hawks team, other than Randy Whitman, is not on that court. You know, but it does feel like these two organizations, their fan bases really carry all those scars with them. And so that's why it's been so interesting to see in Game 3, you know, you have Washington totally collapse and hang on. In Game 4, Atlanta really almost collapsed that game away with three horrible defensive sequences on after timeout plays. You know, what was Dennis Schroeder doing getting off the ball at the end of the game instead of Teague? I mean, they really almost blew that game, and it's just been interesting to see these two teams kind of, you know, I won't say tighten up, but just kind of tease their fan bases in this series. It's what makes it so interesting. You know, last year there was like a upstart Washington against established Indiana. This year it's really none of that. That's why at least the NBA fan of me and not the Wizards fan is super intrigued by this series, and I think slowly most of the rest of the basketball world, after dismissing it as an Eastern Conference series, has kind of caught on to what makes how interesting it is.
Yeah, I had Chris Willis on last week that writes for Peachtree Hoops with you guys, and you know, I was discussing how similar maybe the fan bases are of these two teams, kind of come with some of the points you made, in the sense that it was really hard to hate Atlanta, even though we're in the same division, even though we know that division rivalries don't really mean that much, because they're kind of similar, where they've kind of been downtrodden, they've had some bad years, they were good, but never really great, you know, maybe the Josh Smith era, you compare to maybe the Josh Smith, Joe Johnson era, compare a little bit to the Gilbert Arenas era, where, you know, they never really got over the hump. They had some success, had some, you know, all-star type of players. But it was really hard to hate. And I think that and it's been hard to see. I mean, I think Dennis Schroeder is kind of annoying once in a while. And I think Horford pushes off a lot and gets away with stuff. And that, obviously, I think Teague is maybe the villain of the series because of hurting Wall inadvertently and then pushing Beal. Kind of in a bad play on Saturday, and then he kind of talked smack to him, but he finally had a good bust-out game, and I thought that was kind of the difference in the maybe the Atlanta's maybe success playing a lot better than it did on Saturday. But I think, as in going back to Paul
Pierce... Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, going back to Paul Pierce is that, you know, we have auto dunking on, you know, now he can't miss threes, but this confidence that he's having, you know, played really great defense in the first series against Toronto on DeRozan. He's been active, cutting behind the hoop, you know, guarding Korver. Him and Beal have been great on Korver. And just an attitude that you know, Otto's celebrating. He's chest bumping. Even Beal last night. Beal was, you know, fantastic. 34 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds, 3 steals. And there was a, you know, Beal kind of just had that, like, give me the ball look at the end of the game last night. And, you know, he had a couple of big shots. He was kind of puffing his chest out, getting pumped up. And, you know, Wall's always been like that kind of player. He's never had a hard time motivating himself, but Beal and Porter kind of sometimes they'll get sleepy moments where they disappear. Do you think the Paul Pierce effect has played to them? I think it has.
Yeah, to some degree. I think also they've been able to get a chance to do what they need to do. Again, just they're playing with more space and more pace, and you know, Otto. When he played during the regular season, I don't recall him playing a lot with the starters.
No.
You know, now he's playing with guys who he doesn't have to shoot, he doesn't have to create plays, he doesn't have to throw the ball in the post and stand around, you know. He can kind of be the fifth hustle guy. So it's really helped his game. I think Pierce has certainly made a difference there. It's hard to say exactly how or verbalize it, but it's definitely there. You know, the one question that the Wizards have to figure out is, like, this is, for Beal, I think this is the second straight year where he played so much better in the playoffs than he did during the regular season, which is interesting. And then with Otto, I mean, it's now the first year. I mean, how good are these guys? And I bring that up because I think it's important for them. You know, they're both young. They have a lot of upside, but, you know, you have to think now moving forward, you know. Gortat is a, seems like a key part of the piece and puzzle, and he can hang up, hang around for a while. Nene is clearly declining. They can find more Ramon Sessions and Chris Humphreys and whatever, but, you know, obviously next summer Durant's free agent. And just in general, I mean, they have to start getting, they have to do something to get to the next level. I mean, are, do you think that those Beal and Otto are good enough to be top four or five players on a title team? Or title contender. I mean, this is so reductive, but we have to think in these terms.
No, I think that's good. I don't know if you got a chance to read Zach Lowe's piece on the Wizards today yet.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I think he kind of it's a really good piece on Grantland. He kind of gets into some of that, right? You pay Bradley Beal the max next summer when he's available, but then he can only get 4 years because they used the 5 year on John Wall. So if they wait until he's a free agent in 2 more years,
I don't think that's true.
Is that true?
Yeah, you have to wait till next year to do that.
Yeah. 2 years, right?
Yeah, you have to wait. You can't get if he doesn't sign this summer and he becomes a restricted free agent, you can give him 5 years.
Okay.
That happened to Eric Bledsoe this year. Remember?
Yep, that's right. And so, and I think he kind of gets into that as in, okay, so say Beal has done that, but, you know, kind of gets into how he's been kind of up and down with injuries and not as consistent. And I would say overall the season after last postseason, you'd say he had a mildly disappointing season. I would agree with that. I think that he's been better on defense. What's been really striking about Beal's thing is the things that we complain about, right? Go to the rim, shoot more threes. And what is he doing more last night? Last night he's four.
He's going to the rim and shooting more threes.
Yeah,
right?
It's like he had 9 free throws. I thought there was at least 3 or 4 calls where he got smashed and didn't get free throw calls, but Dennis Schroeder was somehow. And he was 4 of 8 from threes. And, you know, sometimes he would just say the whole Whitman thing of, you know, I take the shots that they give me. And I know he pushed back sometimes when, you know, some reporters at the end of the season asked him why he's not shooting more threes when he had such a high percentage, but he was ranked like, you know, 40th or 50th in attempts per game. And he kind of got a little annoyed at those questions, but the evidence bears out that they were right. And that's been kind of the mode to success. And I think that I want to transition into just the Wizards offense in general. I mean, last night they were down, the defense was really bad. They were down 11, I think, at half. The score, but they were 10 of 15 from three to keep him in the game. They ended up 12 of 26 on the game. And once again, another game in the postseason where I think they had 9 or more threes. What is it? Just middle? Is it just as much as just playing more small and shooting more? I mean, have you seen anything in sets? Why is it? You know, I know they're not playing Nene. They're not going to the Nene post downs as much. A little bit. Because he has been struggling. It seemed like last night with Gortat, who had his worst game of the playoffs, they didn't really run the Gortat pick and roll with him struggling. Why do you see, what are your thoughts? Why the Wizards are now just bombing threes and making a bunch?
Yeah, it's a great mystery. I don't know. A lot of it is lineups. They are playing smaller more often. And even when they're not small, they've got Drew Gooden at the four a lot more. I mean, Chris Humphreys has not played much in the playoffs. And I think that that's a big reason why. So they really aren't playing with their starting unit nearly as much because of that. I, you know, in the Toronto series, a lot of it was because the Raptors could not contain a wall at all, and so they overheld and there were openings there. In this series, it's been a little different. I mean, the Hawks, obviously Wall hasn't been there the last few games, and they're still shooting threes. They just seem a little bit more aggressive and just kind of taking their shots. I haven't really noticed them running significantly different actions and stuff. I think they're obviously using a lot more dribble handoff, which has been really successful. They're more willing to pull up. I mean, Atlanta is hanging back on a lot of these plays, so they're more aggressive in pulling up. They're running up a little further from the basket. And the Wizards have such great screen setters that they can get separation on any of these plays. And with all that space, they have ways to kind of manipulate the defense. I haven't really noticed significantly different sets, though. I just think that they're playing with a lot more, I mean, I hate the word pace because pace can refer to possessions per game, which I think is a poor way of using the term. But pace can also just refer to how quickly are you going from action to action, how quickly are you making decisions with the ball, as opposed to, like, seconds on the shot clock that are used. I think if you use pace by the second definition, the Wizards are just much more, they have much better pace. They're getting shots up more. So I don't really think it's a schematic change. I think what's confusing is I don't know exactly why all of a sudden now it's, you know, we got to play, get these shots up and we have to move the ball a lot quicker. And in the regular season, it was so difficult to do that. I'm not really sure why that was.
Yeah, currently, right now, the Wizards have 107.7 points on offensive rating, offensive efficiency. That is leads the NBA in postseason. The Clippers are right behind them at 107.6. The Wizards have a better offense in the playoffs than the Warriors, than the Spurs, than the Rockets.
Amazing. Now,
and that's three games.
The Wizards have not played the Grizzlies.
Correct, and that is, but that is also with three games without John Wall. Which is
that's true too. Yeah, I mean, it really is amazing. I mean, they finally realized that they've got this great screen setting talent. Maybe some of it is that those two bigs have accepted that this is their role. They're not going to get as many post touches. I mean, that was a problem for Gortat all season, and now it seems like he's accepted that he's just not going to get the ball inside as much. And Nene as well. I mean, those guys are really focusing on doing what they can do to kind of free the guard. You know, maybe a lot of that is the mentality. And so that's not really anything. I mean, it is something that Randy has some control over, but it's not really, that's not just the coaching switch. You know, those guys have to be willing to make the change themselves.
And I think, so what is your, I know you mentioned earlier, it's a mystery. And I've been in discussions with people because, I mean, the number one angst of the anti-Whitman stuff has always been about this frustrating offense and his terse responses to about analytics and this block. You know, I think somebody coined it blogger ball, kind of modern era of, you know, attacking to the rim, shooting threes. And here he is kind of embracing in the playoffs. And they said that, you know, this whole pot, was he playing possum in the regular season? To me personally, and I keep reiterating, I think it was just a matter of they had a lot of bigs. I mean, they had Blair, Humphreys, Gortat, Nene, and Serafin, who don't, nobody really shoots threes, and then Gooden just kind of started shooting threes at the end of the season. So you have six bigs that basically needed minutes, and you didn't play Paul Pierce at the four. I don't know. I think it was just a matter of him trying to caress a lot of egos in that locker room and getting people playing time than more style difference. Now, people don't think that's, they don't want to hear that argument because they think that, well, you should just play this way the whole time. Why didn't you? And what are your thoughts on just Rainey's approach to the regular season, turning this around, and why? I just didn't think the personnel set up to shoot a lot of threes, and especially with the emergence of Gooden and Porter, which really wasn't around in the regular season until the end of the year, I guess.
Yeah,
with Gooden.
I think you're right. I think the roster, has a lot to do with it. Now, I would argue that the roster, Artie Grunfeld's not going to set up a roster that goes against what Randy Whitman wants to do. So they're both kind of culpable for the players that they have. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have a roster that makes sense for how they thought Randy wanted to play. So, but I agree that there's just a lot of things that needed minutes. I mean, Gwan Blair really has not played much this year, so I mean, even when you set him aside, you're talking about a lot of different players. I think that's a lot of it. Some of it might have to do with, I don't know how much Pierce wanted to bang at the four for a long season. You know, one of the things that the Wizards have argued is that they wanted to save Pierce's minutes, and they didn't want to stretch him, and that's why they really haven't played small as much as they did. You know, I think there would have been a way to do it and still put Pierce in the four anyway, but there's something to that. You know, and maybe it really is possible that, they go into this Raptors series and they say, this is a team without any bigs that can really hurt us. You know, this is a team where it's worth trying to play at the four and see what happens. And then game one happens in that series and the small lineup blows Toronto off the floor. I mean, I think that's a big factor too. Mm-hmm. Let's say that the small lineup only plays Toronto evenly in that first game and they lose. Do you think that they're going to stick with that? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that's a big, that game won overtime win. You know, again, remember, they almost blew that game. I think that's set, that made, that set the stage for a lot. You know, what if that game turns out differently? You know, so I think that they did change, they changed their thinking. I mean, what's going to be a really interesting question is, okay, so now they know that this works. They probably have him here for one more year. I think he's going to stay. You know, do they play small again next year? Do they split Gortat's minutes right down the middle again? Like, or do they just revert? Like, I don't know. That's, I think, the big thing to kind of take a look at. But, you know, the truth is always somewhere in the middle. It's not Randy really hates playing that way and was strong-armed into it. It's not that Randy was playing possum either. Somewhere straight down the middle with a lot of different factors. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see going forward, you know, whether the team looks at this as, well, we have these two matchups against smaller teams and that's why we did it. Or if they say they have this eureka moment and they realize that, look, we've got a great point guard that loves to run. We can still defensive rebound with one big, you know, and we can still have depth. You know, play. We can play both styles if we want to, but really, our identity is that we've got to be able to spread the floor for him and have people that can run with him.
Yeah, and the thing is that they haven't really. If you look at the defensive stats, I think they've slipped a little bit because of last night's game, but they're still fourth in the playoffs in defense efficiency. And so, you haven't seen a huge dramatic drop off by not having that extra big that they normally would have with their starting unit. So that's been kind of an interesting thing of how they've played this out. Speaking of Randy Whitman, we gotta talk about this, Michael. Mike, all right. So Mr. Randy Whitman, Michael Lee, with John Wall gets injured. I'm sure everyone listening to this has known about this, but let's just let's just read you the paragraph. Michael Lee about John Wall's injury last week. Wall refused to accept the initial diagnosis of a real bad sprain after x-rays immediately following the game were negative. According to a person with knowledge of the situation, Wall clashed with team medical staffers before sitting out Tuesday because he felt something more serious has caused his hand to explode. After a few days of confusion and concern, Wall got the confirmation of bone fractures that he never really wanted, leaving fans of the team with broken hearts. It's funny, as I read that article, and that stood out to me. But it was buried down below in the article, and, you know, because of the history with the Wizards and the training staff from Gilbert Arenas, and go down the list. What were your thoughts before we get into how Randy Whitman reacted the next day? Just your take on this whole situation with Wall's injury and the medical staff.
Well, I think that I don't really know what happened, obviously. I'll just say that right off the bat. You know, I don't know what happened. A lot of this is guesswork. I think that it's obviously a thing that was correctly pulled out because it is interesting. I didn't read it as like he was angry at the diagnosis so much as they must have both been angry at the situation. I mean,
yeah, frustrated, right? I felt they were just frustrated that it's, but they're all cool.
Yeah, I don't
right?
read it. I don't know. Maybe I don't read it as that much of a negative as obviously the Wizards felt it was or Randy felt it was. I just thought that this is a hard injury to diagnose. I mean, the X-rays and people who are upset about, like, well, they missed the injury and they misdiagnosed it. I mean, first of all, this is a different training staff and a lot of different, you know, doctors or whatever than they had in the past. Second of all, if you knew anything about how these apparatuses work, it's really hard to spot a non-displaced fracture of an X-ray.
Yep.
Especially when the hand's swelling like that. I mean, it's just, you obviously know something is wrong, but you don't really know what it is. You know, you can't spot that at all on an X-ray. It's hard to spot an MRI. You know, so I think 30 teams in the league would have had the same issue. And it's not a problem with the Wizards, but if you're John Wall and you're wondering, you know, look, my hand is ballooned to, like, the size of the Incredible Hulk, and you're telling me it's a sprain, like, yeah, I'm going to be a little upset about that, you know?
Yeah, well, this...
But that's going to be frustrating. I don't think it's, like, a sign of the... I don't know what happened. Maybe the argument was a little bit more heated or a little bit more pointed. I just don't know. But And it didn't seem like that much of a, I mean, it's a thing, but it didn't seem like a reason to criticize the medical staff, which I don't think, and that's why I think it was buried. I think it was kind of like a tidbit that raises kind of, given that the diagnosis took several days to kind of, you know, be spelled out, I think it is important that there was a bit of some conflict over it. I think that's important information. That's stuff that we want to know. That someone was arguing on our comment section that it was unnecessary information. I totally disagree. I think it's very interesting. You know, I'm not sure why Randy responded the way he did. But, you know,
hold your thoughts on that one. Let's just play it.
I mean, you guys, that, you know, I got to get this off my chest. You guys that know me, I know that I am completely honest with you guys. I don't always tell you everything, all right? But I don't ever come out here and tell you a lie. And what was reported today by Michael Lee is a flat-out lie about John clashing with doctors and the training staff. That is unfair to this kid. That is so far from the truth. I've got to say something. And if your inside source obviously isn't on the inside, that's not fair to this kid or our doctors that are busting their ass to have something like that said. That's not right. I have to stand up for those people in there.
I understand.
But I don't want to hear anything else. Next question.
You brought it up.
Next question.
You brought it up.
All right, next question.
Okay, first of all, I don't understand why he was so upset with that comment. I never understand like he felt that there was an attack on John, when in reality I think we just kind of described that.
Yeah,
it was,
I agree with you. I don't know.
And then what was his point of why would he call Michael Lee out by name in a thing when he knows he's had a working relationship with Michael Lee for years and years? He can pull him aside privately and talk to him. And for him to do that like that, kind of make Michael Lee somehow the story or question his integrity, I thought was a jerk move. And I mean, I get that he wanted to defend his guys, but to me, it comes down to the subjective nature of the word clash and how maybe it can both be where John was upset and frustrated and then they were all cool afterwards. I thought that was a potential source, and I don't think Michael Lee's reporting would be any accurate on that. And I just thought it was bizarre for all the reporters to go after be Michael Lee and to call him out by name. I thought the situation was a bad look for Randy.
Yeah, it was very bizarre. It means one of two things. It means that it was a total lie, or it means that it was dead on. And you want to kind of make it like actually right on the money, and this was all grandstanding to try to get people to believe it wasn't. You know, you always hear the old saying in public career, you act strong when you are weak, when you act weak when you are strong. So it means one of those two things. I think it was the wrong way to handle it. I think it's hard to argue otherwise. It's unfortunate, really, I think, how many people thought that was a fair way to handle it. I don't know why it was handled in that manner. It is also weird that it was, like, not fair to John. I mean, it seemed like Mike was saying that John got proven right. So, I don't really understand that. Yeah, again, I don't really know what actually happened. So, without really knowing what actually happened, it's tough to say who was right or wrong. But I don't think that was the right way to handle that. Whether it was, like, a good strategic way to handle it, I mean, there's one school of thought that says that this just drew more attention to something that could have just been forgotten. But the other school of thought is a frankly, depressingly, I found so many people siding with the coach that perhaps it was strategically smart to kind of drag someone else's reputation through the mud the way he did. So I don't know why he handled it that way. I thought that was the wrong way to handle it. But, you know, without knowing whether it was the actual fact is true or not, it's also tough to say. I mean, if it really was a total lie, which I strongly doubt, but it might be, who knows, then, you know, yeah, bad reporting is bad reporting, but I don't know, that seemed like a strange way to handle it, and I don't want to project anything more on why it was handled that way, because I don't know.
Yeah, no, what amazed me is that, first of all, this isn't New York Post, this wasn't a headline that says, wall clashes with doctors, you know what I mean?
That's true, but what happens a lot, and this is, we did this too, because I thought it was important details spell out of that. Maybe Mike doesn't report it that way, but there's like, you know, all the different sites are going to kind of aggregate that story and kind of pull out that part. So whether that Mike didn't say that, you know, it's out there in that manner. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you're basically, so the original report is pretty straight up journalistically, but then it gets centralized as it gets aggregated out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's totally fair to aggregate that part of the story.
No, I think so too.
No question, but a lot of times now, it's like when someone's yelling at a reporter, they're really not yelling at the guy who wrote the story. They're yelling at the fact that the story reached, kind of went on down the line and suddenly became a big thing. And how it was kind of pulled out. So, and that's not really the reporter's fault, but at the same time, you knew that was something like that was going to happen.
So, what do you think
the women might look at it as like it's really besides the point of who we're yelling at. The real important thing is that we're trying to make this point that whatever is out there is wrong.
Why do you think you saw people siding with Whitman on this?
Well, I mean, I think they probably took him at his word that it was wrong. And if someone reports incorrect facts, then that's it's obviously a big, you can't do that. So I think they probably took him at his word.
So, or is it just more because you can never really lose when you bash the media?
if you take what he's saying at face value and that it was a complete lie, then yeah, I mean, that's a problem. The reporter should be criticized. I just happen to think that it was not a lie, most likely. So that's really the question at hand.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, obviously, I'm somewhat biased because I like Michael professionally and personally. So I have a bias, and I've been on the other end of some Randy Whitman tantrums. I know you have experience with him. So I do see that, like, him sticking up for his guys, you know, because that's what kind of has ever been. John Wall, I guess? Is that who he's, or his doctors or trainers? I think that's who Whitman think he was sticking up for.
People said he was sticking up for his guy, but I don't know if he really was. I think he was sticking up for the trainers.
Trainers, that's what I mean. Not John Wall. Like
injury.
The doctors, right? The staff?
Yeah, whoever was diagnosing it, I don't know if it was a doctor, a trainer, a combination, whatever it was.
So that goes into Wall. It appeared his swelling went down today. I don't know if you saw the report that he was, did he dribble? What are your thoughts on this, and should he play? I mean, should he just sit out? I mean, is this just about his pain threshold? I still don't think he's going to be able to dribble basketball. Do you think the risk is worth it? Where do you fall down on this?
It's not my body, so I really can't tell him whether he should play or not. It does sound like there is the risk that you can displace the fractures, which would make the injury worse. And obviously that's a big risk, and, you know, if there's a real risk of that happening, then, you know, that can mean surgery, and that could really have some long-term implications. I'm not quite ready to close the book on him playing, though. I just have a weird hunch that he's going to come back at some point. If they're down 3-2 in Game 6, it really would not be a huge surprise to me if he tried to play. Whether he should play or not, I'm not really sure. It's just not my body. I can't really say. But it's just hard. You have to put yourself in the Wizards position. Again, we go back to what we talked about at the top of the show. The East is wide open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were really, frankly, I think the most impressive team in the East prior to Ball's injury. When you consider, you know, everything that had gone on, you know, the Hawks struggling, the Cavs injured, the Bulls kind of up and down. They frankly were, I think, the most impressive team in the East. And then the injury happens. You know, they could really think to themselves that we could have really made the finals. This hadn't happened. And so they may, that unfortunately may color whatever everybody's judgment. And Wall's doing the same thing. It's a breakout playoffs. I mean, why would he want to sit out? So I just hope they make a smart, rational decision considering the long-term implications. And I think they will. And, you know, if there's really not a ton of risk that fractures get displaced, then yeah, sure. Bring him back, but it's not really for me to say. I don't think.
Do you still think they can win the series without Wall?
I think it'll be very difficult. I'm not saying no because the Hawks did not look super impressive, but they've got to win one of these two in Atlanta. I think it's going to be very difficult.
So the Will Bynum sessions lead into the Promised Land.
Now I'm saying that. if you just think about it, Game 4, Brad and Beal and Pierce had some of the best games they've had all playoffs, and they could win. I mean, it's hard to get that kind of effort from those two guys every single night, I think.
Yeah, I mean, at the perimeter defense, you know, that's where I think John was really missed last night. They just could not stop the penetration of Atlanta, and it really hurt.
Yeah.
It really hurt them. And you know, and Gortat and Porter having off games when Brad and Pierce basically had awesome ones. It was tough, but they still were able to cut it out. I think you're right in the sense that you know they were 9-15, Beal and Pierce combined. 56 points. I mean, are they going to get that again? You know, obviously Gortat's going to play a little bit better, but yeah, it's a tough one to expect them to win two out of three with two games in Atlanta without their best player. I think that's maybe going to be. I think maybe they could have done it last night if they would have stole one last night. I think that maybe they could have won the series, but now with 2-2 and 2 in Atlanta, yeah, I think it's going to be tough. And as for John Wall. Yeah, I can maybe see him gutting it out. I still just doubt that he's going to be able to palm a basketball and play. You know, he's such a dominant left-handed player. He finishes so much with his left, goes left. I think a couple times maybe people will try to hammer him, get some fouls on that wrist, get in that wrist, and then that pain and throb will just force him. But I do think that he will go up to the levels of his pain threshold because you were correct. I mean, through the first five games of these playoffs, they were – there was stuff on ESPN where they were starting to talk about him as the postseason MVP.
I thought it was deserved. So, yeah, it's tough, but we'll see what happens in games 5 and 6, going forward.
Cool. And then one last one on the low piece, on the whole Kevin Durant premise. What did you think of him going through the whole Kevin Durant things and do the Wizards have enough money? Because of the Beal situation, and what are your thoughts of? It seems to me is that really Plan A and B for the Wizards, and maybe Al Horford is Plan B or C.
Yeah, I mean it's too early to tell what's going on. Obviously, Durant is out there. That's clearly what they want to do. I think they're going to figure the money out. You know, they're not going to get in a situation where they could get Durant and they don't have the money for it. You know, they're not that stupid.
Yeah,
you know, they're going to figure that part out. As far as a Plan B, I mean, that is the danger, right? I mean, they miss on Plan A, and then they deal with the Bulls, and they give too much money to a guy like Carlos Boozer. You know, that would be the concern. Cousins was thrown out there. I mean, that's, again, another thing that's out there. You know, Al Horford would be great. I don't know why Al Horford would leave Atlanta, but, you know, Al Horford would be fantastic. A lot can change, though, in a calendar year. I mean, how many of us thought Kevin Love would be in play, you know, 9 months ago?
Or, yeah, I mean, even look at the Marcus Aldridge rumors now, right?
Right. Yeah, so you just never know. I mean, something will come along. You know, you just have to hope that they don't overpay here. There's going to be so much money out there that summer. You just hope that they don't kind of overpay a tier C guy that really becomes a blip on their cap. You know, they have to be smart about
sorry,
that.
My babies are all crazy. Mm-hmm.
All right, Mike. Well, you know, thanks so much for coming to me. What do you got going on for the people? Any previews of stuff you're working on or writing, or what you got coming up? I know you're just covering all the
things. Nothing crazy right now, but I am going to try to go to Game 6 in D.C. Hopefully I can make that work.
Oh, you're coming down.
I'm going to try to come down. We'll see.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been there buying, you know, $11, $12 beers. It's been great. But no,
yeah.
it's been
hopefully, I mean, it's a lot of times, but because I have to balance being an editor, but I'm going to see if I can try to make it down for Game 6.
You know, I mean, the four games have been great. Obviously, you know, winning helps, but just the electricity in the building, people being into it. I know playoff basketball is different, but it has definitely been the worst of price admission. And last night, it filled up down below, but there was definitely a lot more open seats than there was in the Raptor series for some reason, which I don't really understand. But Mike, thanks a lot for joining me, man, and have a good one, and I'll be in touch.
All right, take care, Adam.
All right, thanks a lot. Another episode of Pixel and Roll Show. With me, Mike Prada. I'm Adam McGinnis. Peace out.
Those people in there.
I understand.
All right, I don't want to hear anything else. Next question.
You brought it up.
All right, next question.